You might wonder, is it possible for my child with special needs to receive a rich classical Christian education? Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope answers yes. With the Simply Classical curriculum created by Cheryl and published by Memoria Press, there's no reason to withhold a beautiful education from any struggling student. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world.
I don't know if that can be said about the sexual revolution. I think sexual revolution had utopian goals. Absolutely utopian goals. Goals that would liberate not only women, but men and everyone else from any kind of morality. It was, in that sense, kind of a totalitarian revolution, still is. I think we're seeing its totalitarian tenor in the fact that the more it wins in the courts or in public opinion, the more it demands. And where it stands first with hat in hand at the door of the room saying, all we want is just equality, the next thing you know, it's not about equality anymore. The sexual revolution, on all of its fronts and in its, all of its facets, has been remarkably successful. Now, that doesn't mean that it's done good. It's done great ill. It has harmed many, many people. It's brought about, well, it's actually been deadly. If you stop and think about it, 53 million abortions and counting are, well, we could lay them squarely at the foot of the sexual revolution. So what are its lies? What's its propaganda? What kind of class warfare has it introduced? And what about its myth of reproductive freedom that gave us those tens of millions of abortions? On this Thursday afternoon, July the 16th, we begin a new series with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. Jennifer taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the new book, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. Jennifer, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, thanks for having me on.
You are a defector, refugee from the sexual revolution, I believe, yourself. In your days when you were part of the movement, which of the many lies of the sexual revolution did you believe most?
Well, you know, I don't know that I was ever part of it in the sense of giving ideological assent to it, but I think the thing, but I think I was a kind of camp follower, you know,
fellow traveler.
A lot of people, fellow traveler, a third column. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but I think a lot of people get swept away by some of these lies, and I think for me the biggest one was, as long as you use contraception, you can have sex with anybody you want, and it'll really be okay. And, you know, I acted on that. A lot of people acted on that. And there are all kinds of problems that you can get into, even if you never get pregnant and even if you never get any STDs, you know. So it's a very thin view of what human sexuality actually means, you know. And that, in a way, is its biggest lie, you know, to reduce sexual activity to something that's just about the immediate pleasure and not about the bigger picture of how sex fits into our lives.
What is the sexual revolution? If you had to put it in a paragraph to someone who, because it is the air we breathe, many people probably think it's just something that happened back in the 60s, but it's obviously going strong now. What is it?
I define it as having three major tenets, Todd. The first one being that a good society will separate sex from procreation. That's the first thing. Separate sex from babies. Second point is that you can separate both sex and babies from marriage. So marriage is completely unimportant, irrelevant to whether you are sexually active and whether you have any children. And then the third point is that men and women are completely interchangeable, that there's no significant difference between men and women. Anything that you observe between men and women that's different is almost certainly the result of some kind of injustice that society should strive to correct. So those are the three things that I think it can be boiled down to those three things combined. And, of course, all three of those things are untrue. Sex actually does make babies. Children actually do need their parents, and hence marriage really is the right place to have sex and babies. And then thirdly, men and women actually are different. So you're trying to build a society around three things that are false, and obviously you're going to do a lot of people a lot of harm if you try to do that.
I think we'll be coming back to those themes again and again in the course of our conversation, but you have, and this is probably the fruit of having thought and written about the sexual revolution as long as you have, you begin by talking about kind of a new class warfare that the sexual revolution has given us. What is that?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. If you look at it today, if you just think about what's the biggest issue of our time right now, obviously it's this issue of whether we're going to have a gender requirement for marriage. And the Supreme Court recently ruled that absolutely no gender requirement is valid for any marriage. No state can require a man and a woman. That movement happened entirely through the elites. And it's so obvious. I would never have seen it if I hadn't been up close and personal involved in all of these campaigns all this time. But the amount of money that has poured into the campaign for redefining marriage, the number of very wealthy people in both political parties who have supported that. And now it won all across the country simply because Anthony Kennedy decided that it's going to win, you know. So it's been a movement of the elites. And even the so-called public opinion polls don't impress me very much, because the entertainment media and the news media and TV broadcasting, radio, all of those people have been working very hard and very systematically to manipulate public opinion and to promote a certain view of marriage and family and sexuality and men and women and gender identity and all of that stuff. That has all been really presented to people in a hugely systematic campaign. So I see, seeing that, how that has all gone down here in with our immediate case, if you look back in history, what you will see is that pretty much every stage of the sexual revolution came about because somebody in the elite classes wanted it to come about. There was no campaign of the poor demanding free contraception. That was the rich people wanting the poor people to have fewer babies. There was no campaign by ordinary people for no-fault divorce. That was created by the American Law Institute. You know, so one case after another, you know, this thing has been generated and orchestrated by people who you would not in your wildest dreams call every man or every woman. You know, it's been something of the elites that has been imposed on the rest of the country.
And you have often pointed out, and you do in your new book as well, that the ruling class, as you have called them before, they always failed to mention, sometimes I think even intentionally disguise the fact, that because they have the resources, they can essentially buy themselves out of the problems that their own revolution creates.
Yes, I think that's right. And the other part of the story is that now, as things have kind of settled down a little bit, you know, we have a new kind of equilibrium in this country, where it's not the case that college students are burning their bras and being radical and that kind of stuff. Now we have a situation where the educated classes have basically the same marriage behavior as people did in the 1950s. You know, if you look at divorce rates, you look at a tendency to have kids out of wedlock, those type of things, your average college-educated person behaves a lot like Leave It to Beaver. The only difference is that the average college-educated person today gets married and starts the whole process about 10 years later than would have been done back in the 50s, you know. But so where the change in behavior has really taken place has been in the working class and the lower classes. That's where you see marriage completely disappearing out of whole communities. That's where you see people when they do get married, having a lot of instability in their marriages. And I think that for the elites to really admit that and really own up to that, it would take a lot for them to do that, because they're committed to an ideology that they're not actually not living in a certain sense. At the personal level, they're not living it, you know. So it's kind of a contradictory position that we find ourselves in.
I want to talk a little bit about the propaganda, which kind of begins with something you mentioned earlier in the book, and it doesn't sound like propaganda, but it certainly is. It's that initial pleading of the sexual revolution. You know, all we really want is fill in the blank. But of course, that all we really want, that blank has been filled in with an awful lot of things in the last 50 years.
That's right. As a matter of fact, in the book, I actually decorate that little part of the book with an illustration from Charlie Brown showing Lucy holding the football. And Charlie Brown having that sour look on his face, like, oh, no, not again. You know, so whenever we hear these people saying, oh, all we want to do is this one little thing, you know, we really shouldn't be believing it, you know. But yes, just to go back to the one of the very first ones, I don't know how many people realize that this year is the 50th anniversary of Griswold versus Connecticut, which was the big case that removed all state regulation of any kind of contraception. And so on. And it took them about 30 years of trying to get that to happen. But how many people know what they actually said when they went into court? When they went into court, they said, all we really want to do is make contraception available to married couples who have serious health problems. Can you believe that they talked like that? You know, no, we won't give it to unmarried people. Oh, no, we wouldn't give it to minors. Oh, no. You know, and here we are. Here we sit with public schools educating fourth graders on how to put condoms on. You know, it's crazy that they talk like that, that they behave that way.
Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California, and author of the new book, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. It's part one of a series with her on that book and on the sexual revolution. We're talking about the new class warfare, the sexual revolution's propaganda that we'll get into a little bit more after the break, and the myths of reproductive freedom today on Issues Etc.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Well, Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's the first part of a series on the sexual revolution with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founder and president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. Jennifer, let's talk again about what you call the steady stream of propaganda. That I like the way you put it. You say it's you have to dedicate, if you're going to be part of the sexual revolution, dedicate yourself to a steady stream of propaganda intended to overwrite the basic facts of reality. This is a war on reality. It's not just a war on any particular thing, although it is individually. It is a war basically on reality. You say even if it requires rewriting history. Give us an example.
Well, I mean, just think about the claim that men and women are completely interchangeable. Men and women are, there's no difference between men and women. So I, as a woman, this was a big one for me. You asked earlier what are the big lies that I believed. I believed I could postpone childbearing as long as I wanted to, and it would all be okay, you know. So a man can work through his whole career and never have to stop to take care of kids. A woman gets on that same career track. It doesn't work for her in the same way, right? And so we're supposed to postpone having our kids. When we do have the kids, we're supposed to put them in daycare, and we're supposed to be okay with all of that, right? And so I can remember, Todd, I can easily remember taking my daughter to a Montessori kindergarten. She was about five at that time, and we were you know, kind of comfortable with me leaving her there. But I saw mothers bringing their brand new baby, 6-week-old babies there, and the baby is screaming, the woman has tears streaming down her cheeks, and we're supposed to not notice. We're supposed to think that where that woman really belongs is at the office, you know? And so that incident, that one little vignette, is giving you powerful personal information that tells you it's just not true that your female body doesn't matter. You know, your female body and your attachment to your baby absolutely matters. And so we have to just continually smack that woman with information telling her that she's better off at the office, the baby will talk sooner if it's at daycare, you know, and all this kind of stuff to overwrite the things that you can see for yourself are really the truth, that you react differently than your husband does, that you feel differently than your baby feels differently towards you than towards the husband. You know, it's all the way down the line. Evidence that men and women are different is in front of us. Evidence that we're attached to our babies and want to take care of them, that's in front of us on a daily basis. And so you've got to, you know, continually fill people's heads with stuff that will override all that stuff.
Why is abortion not only key to the advancement of the sexual revolution, but why has it been the subject of some of the most intense, and in some cases, if we weren't talking about human lives, it would be the most laughable kind of propaganda?
Right. Well, abortion is important because it's the only thing, it's the ultimate backup plan for proving the first point of the sexual revolution. So the first point, remember I said, is that sex and babies can be completely separated from each other. Sex doesn't really make babies. The payoff from that, of course, is you can have unlimited sex without a baby ever showing up. That's the system we're trying to create. Well, the fact is, all contraception fails sometimes. And so if you're out having sex with somebody that really, in a situation that really can't sustain a pregnancy, and then your contraception fails, what are you going to do? Well, you need abortion as a backup plan, or at least a lot of people think that they then need an abortion as their backup plan. And so without legalized abortion on demand, the claim that sex doesn't make babies, that would be completely crazy. Nobody would believe it for a moment. I mean, the fact is, you need to be careful who you have sex with because you could end up being a parent with that person, you know. And becoming a single mom means that you have to somehow deal with that other person, you know, or somehow deal with the fact that that person is your child, half of who your child is. And so you can either become a single mom or you can abort the baby. Those are kind of the choices that people see. Well, it's happened because people have bought this storyline that you're entitled to unlimited sex without the baby ever showing up. So if we ever stop to say, well, gee, abortion is harmful to women, abortion doesn't solve all the problems. Abortion has problems associated with it. Women actually suffer from their abortions, and they sometimes don't get over it, or it takes some work to get over it. If you were ever to talk about those things publicly and systematically and just kind of honestly, people would never buy any part of that whole logical chain of the sexual revolution. You know, you'd be saying, well, no, I'm not going to take that kind of chance. You know, if some women get depressed after they've had an abortion and different things like that. Some women have nighttime terrors and anniversary guilt and anniversary grief and all kinds of things like that. I don't want to take the risk of that. You know, there's a history of mental illness in my family. I've been depressed myself in the past. I don't want to put myself at risk by having an abortion. But no one will ever say that to the woman who presents herself for an abortion. No one will ever say, you, in your particular case, you know, this might not be the best solution to your situation. If you were just doing medicine, that would be what you would say. You would say, gee, you got a risk factor here. You should think of some other solution to this problem, right? But that's not how we treat abortion. We treat abortion as, you know, no big deal, just get rid of the baby and all your problems will be solved. And that is one of the biggest lies of the sexual revolution.
With about a minute here, one of the other ones that I wanted you to talk about, but we have about 90 seconds. that the whole right side of history propaganda ploy, what would you have to say with about a minute here?
Well, you know, people argue as if the sexual revolution is the right side of history. But the fact is, young people are pro-life. Young people are passionately, strongly pro-life. And I think the reason that that's the case is that young people have figured out that at least that part of the sexual revolution puts the interests of children at risk for the benefit of adults, you know. And so you can't really fool kids, you know, who've had that, who are looking around saying, gee, my mom could have just killed me just because she wanted to. I'm kind of a survivor here. And so the younger generation really is very powerfully pro-life. And once you start to really think about it, you'll see that every feature of the sexual revolution really sets aside the interests of adults. Every feature of the sexual revolution sets aside the interests of children for the benefit of adults. And I think as time goes by, people will realize that that is also true of genderless marriage, this latest experiment that we're on, where kids seem to be all in favor of gay marriage or whatever. I think over time, they're going to see that too, like all the other stages of the sexual revolution, that too sacrifices the interests of children to the benefit of adult sexual desires.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the new book, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. You'll find a link to this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thank you very much for being our guest. Look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues, etc., we're going to be looking forward to Sunday morning. According to the historic lectionary, it's going to take us in the gospel reading for this coming Sunday, Mark 8, to Jesus leading the people out to a desolate place. 3 days they spend with him without provision or food, and then he proposes to his disciples that they go away and find something to eat. And then he feeds them, 4,000 plus strong he feeds them. In this coming Sunday's gospel reading, we're going to talk about God's provision through Jesus Christ for our needs, but also talk about the compassion that God has, that only God can have for sinners like us. That's all coming up in our series. Looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary. Pastor Michael Fries will be our guest.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper, every service, every Sunday, and Wednesdays too, preaching Christ crucified and risen. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is, 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri, or find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.
Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran Music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuezetc.org.